Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Warney was an all-time great, a once-in-a-century type cricketer, and his records will live on forever.
Bowled him! How about that? Absolutely brilliant from Shane Warne.
Shane had this presence about him when, if he walked into a room, he didn't even need to say a word, he knew he was in the room.
He's the best I've ever seen.
So many guys in this team and squad who, you know, still hold him as a hero, their all-time favourite player.
He has struck just before lunch.
There will be a technical term for this, lads, but I will call it fizz. When he let go of that ball, it used to fizz. You could hear it.
Flipper, and he's got him again with it.
More important than all of that, he was just the most wonderful human being. He did so much for the people that he loved and cared about, and he's going to be deeply missed.
First ball in Test cricket in England for Shane Warne. And he's done it. He started off with the most beautiful delivery.
Amazing sort of cricketer who, you know, so sad to lose so early.
Shane Warne was out of the Melbourne suburbs, a devoted fan of the St Kilda AFL team and a darn good player of Aussie rules himself. But cricket's luck was that he wasn't quite good enough to turn professional. And so, disappointed at the news he wouldn't have a life in the game that was his first love, he turned to his second love, cricket. At first there were nerves and chubbiness, then came wild, soaring leg breaks, followed by fame and by flippers. For a long while, there was women, there was bookmakers, there were diet pills, there were more women, and there were headlines. Always with Warney, there were headlines. And this the man who in 2000 was rated amongst the five greatest cricketers of the 20th century. When Warney likened his life to a soap opera, he was selling himself short. The story is part fairy tale, part pantomime, part hospital drama, part adults-only romp, part glittering awards ceremony. He took a Test match hat-trick, won the Man of the Match prize in a World Cup final, and was the subject of many, many books. He was also the first cricketer to reach 700 Test match wickets. By the way, he swatted more runs than any other Test player without making 100 and was possibly the wiliest captain that Australia never had. The facts are 145 Test matches, 708 wickets at 25. In one-day internationals, 194 games, 293 wickets at an average of 25. He won the IPL at the first attempt in 2008, a bit of a ragtag bunch, the Rajasthan Royals, but no, he led them to the title. He was Hampshire captain and missed out on the county championship by half a point in a weird year of how they calculated those things. He turned two World Cup semi-finals on their head, brilliance of his leg spin winning the day for the Australians. He made 3,154 runs, the most ever in Test match cricket, without making 100. And as I say, he was one of the five cricketers of the century. With me today, Jared Kimber. Alex Tudor's over there too, he may join in, and Darren Goff. This was an extraordinary cricketer, Goffy. We talked about the man yesterday and the personality and the character. Today we're talking about the cricketer. Of all those you played against, could anybody influence a match in the way that he did?
There was a few. I mean, you look at some of the greats, the Sachin Tendulkar, the Brian Lara, the Jacques Callis, the Ponting, the Steve Waugh, but there's only one Shane Warne. He was the king, and he was the king for a reason. when you played against him or when you turned up, you were fascinated just to see Shane Warne walk out. That strut he had walking out to the middle, that smile he had, that energy he had, that made you feel welcome as though you were one of his mates. But he was reeling you in. Reeling you in, because when you come out the back, guess what? That's another one. That's 522. It was that easy for him. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was an absolute genius at what he did.
And did he have the wood on England at the time, would you say, mentally?
Yes, of course he did. Glenn McGrath many, many times used to knock Atherton over for fun and knock me over for fun as well, but I was coming in down the order. But when it comes down to it, the only thing that separated, not the only thing, but the biggest thing that separated England to Australia was Shane Warne. We didn't have a spinner of that calibre. When you look about some of the greats around the game and you get to that second innings, McGrath knocked you over in the first innings if Shane Warne didn't get a ball. But guess what? Come the second innings, Shane Warne would have got four or five for in the bag before you even walked out there. And he did it on numerous, numerous occasions against us. No disrespect to the ones we had. We had either a Salisbury or a Croft or a Schofield or a Giles. I mean, they had Shane Warne, the greatest that's ever been.
You've made that sound very unfair and very uneven. We're going to wind the clock back to 1993. He'd never bowled in a test match in England. It was a cold day at Old Trafford when he was thrown the ball by Alan Border, and it had the ultimate impact.
First ball in test cricket in England for Shane Warne. And he's done it. He started off with the most beautiful delivery.
Well, that has turned about 2.5 feet. Gadding can't believe his eyes. What a start for Shane Warne.
That was a decent bowl bowled by a decent bowler, and I'm very, you know, you can only accept that they were part of history for that. He couldn't have bowled it in a better place. And of course, because it was going down the leg side, I thought, well, that's great, nice little sight to see what's happening. So, you know, it did, it turned. Ian Healy was down the leg side.
Yeah.
And the reason I stood there in amazement was because you didn't hear the ball hit the stumps, because it didn't. It just flicked the bail off. It not only pitched in the right place, but
bounced
it just
through.
Flicked the bail off, and you didn't hear a thing apart from after a little while, about 2 or 3 seconds, Ian Healy offering me to leave the crease in no uncertain terms.
He certainly revived leg spin. Gat always used to say it got past me and I'm quite wide. But he certainly revived leg spin, which was thought to be extinct at the time. And leg spin almost became preeminent. In fact, in the short form of the game these days, it's essential in any of the franchise formats, certainly, to have a leg spinner. But Jared Kimber, you were a young leg spinner playing in Melbourne yourself as a boy at school when Warne made that first, well, dramatic entrance.
Yeah, I came from Victoria and Melbourne, the same as he did. And when I played, it was everyone wanted to be Merv Hughes or Tony Dottermade, Paul Rifle. There were all these seamers that came through, you know, Melbourne cricket, and that's what everyone wanted to be. And I was the only leg spinner in my competition, not in my team, like in our competition. That was in 90, 91, 92. By 94, I was playing in teams with four leg spinners in them. It was absolutely ridiculous. Anyone was picking up the ball, and there were just kids in the nets who they'd come in a couple of times and they'd rag it sideways. Suddenly they'd be playing in their team's firsts, and everyone was talking about it. It was such a different world to be in. It was like cricket existed in two different places. And we had had leg spin in Australia before, but really, Richie Beno was the last player, and he was now a senior person in the commentary box. It had completely disappeared from Australia. And you might remember this, Mark, you know, in your trips back to Australia. Abdul Qadir and Mushtaq Ahmed were revered in Australia, and they were almost forgotten overnight when Warne came out. He completely changed the way that cricket was played in Australia.
So you've had a crack at it at a very amateur level. What's the hardest thing about bowling a leg break?
Landing it.
There you go. And he landed it more accurately than any other spinner ever.
Look, the thing for all of us, and, you know, there were thousands of us who tried to do the same thing after him, was you could land the ball in the right spot occasionally, and you could spin the ball occasionally. The ability to do both, and the best person to judge him on is Stuart McGill, because Stuart McGill was a magnificent leg spinner. Stuart McGill would bowl half trackers all the time. He'd bowl waist-high full tosses. The ball would get away from him. Warne just didn't do that. It was so consistent. It was incredible.
Okay, we're going to wind the clock back again. We're going to go to Darren Goff's first tour of Australia, 94-5, the Melbourne Cricket Ground, the Boxing Day Test, and a famous performance.
Warne continuing.
Oh, and hit the pad. Yes, he's got him. That's out. LBW. That hit the pad, and that is the end of De Freitas. Oh, and that's out. Caught behind. Yes, he's got him. Fast ball. Beautifully bowled by Warne. Got just pushing forward. A faint little touch there. It bounced a little bit. May have been off the glove or perhaps high on the bat. But that is the end of Gough. Two wickets and two balls. Well bowled.
So Shane Warne is now on a hat-trick.
There we go. Fleming took the last one. Merv Hughes before him. Career.
Superb commentary on a superb piece of cricketing action. Darren Gough pushed forward and gloved it.
He did. The most surprising thing about that is I was trying to defend it. During those early doors of my cricket, it was, and I said to you once, didn't I, fasten your seatbelts. I used to go in and just peg up. But Daffy got done by a flipper, which absolutely did him every time. Daffy didn't have a clue when that was coming. Similar to Stewie. Stewie used to get done with the old flipper as well. Go on the back foot to pull it. Oh dear. And then with me, I got the leg spinner where I pushed forward, it bounced and caught the glove. And then I think he told Devon, didn't he? He was going to bowl him the Google with Booney there at short leg. And he did. And he got caught short leg. And it was a great moment on your home ground to get a test hat trick. It's amazing.
Talk to us about walking out the bat and taking guard with all the fielders around the bat
noise,
at
amazing.
The Melbourne Cricket Ground, full to the rafters, baying for blood, Warne about to bowl at you. What is it? What goes on in your head?
Well, nothing going on in my head at that stage of my career, because for me, I was just living the dream. I was going out to bat in front of 100,000 people at Melbourne, playing for England against Australia. I had no fear whatsoever. I felt invincible. I really did, Mark. And you know that. You saw me on that tour. I had total confidence, but I was going to go in and smash him everywhere. That was my mentality back then. It soon changed 2 years later.
I was
a nervous wreck every time I went
out
to bat.
You didn't get the aura then, the Warne aura.
Oh, no, I loved the fact that I was going out and facing... That made it even better. I was going out and playing against Shane Warne on his home ground, and he loved being here. And I also, the character I am, I loved being out there facing him. I wanted to be in those moments, those big, big moments. But the noise, when he's at the end of his mark, he just lived for it, didn't he? He absolutely lived for that noise. And when he got me out, obviously I was distraught. But one thing you do know when you're out... You do switch off, and you the noise is incredible. And it's his home ground, and they loved him, absolutely loved him, didn't they, in Melbourne?
As you're walking off,
Devon obviously passed me, and I didn't say much to him, to be fair. There's nothing much you can say to Dev. And I went out, and then I heard it when I was taking off his pads, but he got the hat-trick, which is an iconic moment, isn't it? Mm.
Now, you mentioned the flipper. We have to bring up the South African batsman, Darryl Cullen, who had a lifetime in fear of that exact ball. Let's listen.
Flipper, and he's got him again with it. So he's pulled one for four, but missed the second one.
And I think you can guarantee that Shane Warne has outthought him there. Show him the obvious flipper, let him pull it for four, and then slip the other one in. And it was through him, it was candy from kids.
Right, well, I wrote a piece when Shane left us on Crick Info about an extraordinary week when I stayed with him in Melbourne when he was banned for taking a diuretic pill. He had a year out of the game, but that didn't stop him practicing, as it turned out, by breaking cricket's law for... I mean, he was supposed to be banned from all forms of cricket, even club cricket. He wasn't allowed on a club cricket ground, but he convinced a fella to open an indoor school on the outskirts of the city at 6 a.m, and he'd bowl for an hour on his own there from 6 till 7. And I was staying with him, and he said, "Why don't you come and have a hit?" I said, "Oh, all right." So I went and batted against Shane Warne, and this is what I wrote. The first thing that struck me was the aura, even at the start of his 8-pace shuffle and approach. I remember the rhythm of that approach, the power of that delivery stride and the symmetry in the action. I remember the flight of the ball and the hardness as it hit the bat or the body. They say some seamers bowl a heavy ball. Well, let me tell you, so did Shane Warne. I remember the revolutions, the high bounce off the hard synthetic surface and the need to react quickly and definitively. I was surprised at how fast he bowled and how hard it hit the bat and how when he bowled up above the eye line, the ball dipped at the last second and how you panicked in response. It didn't so much spin off that surface, so I asked him if it was like bowling at the whacker. He said, "No, not really. The ball skids at the whacker pitch, so it's easier to bat against me there, but in here, Marky, the bounce will get you." The ball hit the splice a lot and it sent a fizzing sensation up the handle and into the bottom hand. So I adapted at each session by playing softer and softer later and later. I found it very difficult to get down the pitch and meet the ball as it landed, and so I persuaded myself to play back more. It occurred to me that a better player would manage the shimmy down the pitch with more skill and faster footwork, and that the good sweepers would have to take him on in the way that Kevin Peterson managed so successfully on occasions. He hit the pad so often it was a joke. That slider he bowled. He even tried a few flippers, the stuff of gold, but no wrong-uns, that's googlies, because of his shoulder. But on the second morning, I goaded him into bowling a wrong-un, and he winced in pain, and I saw what he went through. I mainly blocked against him because there were so few bad balls. I occasionally slogged over wide mid-on, and I cut it to backward point a bit. There were one or two drives straight and through mid-offs. They were highlights. This was a kingdom of days for me. Warne and Nicholas cutting it as the dawn broke in his hometown. Jared, this whole business about Warne's mystery, you made a point to me that I want to pick you up on. We were talking earlier about him, and you said he used television so well.
Yeah, there was all the heroes before that were pace bowlers because of the West Indies, right? So there was that whole from Tomo all the way through to the West Indies. He had a pause at the top of his mark that was just longer than anyone else. The camera was on him for so much more. When he would go down to, you know, put the dirt on his hands, like, as you know, Mark, that was what Russell Crowe did in Gladiator. That was a homage to Shane Warne. So Shane Warne was so cinematic that in one of the best, you know, biggest movies of all time, there's a Shane Warne moment in it. And I know Russell Crowe has that cricket, you know, relationship and everything, but that you can't not see him. And I think that there was more cinema in what he did. And the fact that everyone was watching him, he was the first bowler for all the super slow-mos and all that. You must have done a million masterclasses in your life on every single delivery, even the made-up ones that we all know didn't really exist. He had about eight different names for straight ones. Everything was on TV, and there was the drama and the staring and the way he made the batter feel in a different way. And I just don't think it existed on that sort of center stage before Shane Warne.
You mentioned Alex Tudor to me that he got you out for fun. I mean, like every time you played against him or something.
Yeah, pretty much. I think Gerard's told me he's got me out three times, which, you know, he used to just get me on the pads. He used to drag me across the stumps, and then he used to just bowl that slider, and he used to just come and hit me on the pads, and I used to just walk off. There was one time, though, where we played at Chelmsford. We played a one-day game. I had come off a big 100 against Derby, so we needed a pinch hitter. I was confident enough. I said, Ronnie, I'll do it. I went out there, went out against Tremlett, and Warney, bless him, he couldn't help himself. Tremor's bowled me. I'm walking back to the pavilion. As I'm walking back to the pavilion, he just turned to me and went, 8 too high for T-bone. I couldn't say anything. I was like, well, fair enough.
Eight too high. T-bone and 8 is too high in the batting order.
As in, and that was Warney's little goodbye to you. I should have been calling it 11, literally. Yeah. Okay, all right. That's what you were saying.
He only did him three times. How many times did he do me, Jared?
7 in Test cricket and 9 altogether.
And guess what? Exactly the same way. He used to throw a couple up outside outside the off stump, big turners, and then I'd go across my stumps. He'd bowl the straight one. He didn't turn out LBW every single time. And so I made up my mind one time. I said, okay, I know exactly how he's going to set me up. I'm just going to sweep him. So I went in, Edgbaston. He put a man out on the square. He had two sweep men. Guess what? He lobbed it right up there, and it was a short boundary at Edgbaston. I swept it, middled it, and went straight down the throat of the man there at on the sweep. So he used to do me for an absolutely laugh every time. He knew it was a walking wicket, and that's what I love about it. And to this, honestly, he is an absolute diamond, and he knew he was going to get me out, but I knew I was going to get him out. And okay. I did on numerous occasions.
All right, I want to read you a passage from his autobiography, No Spin, a book that I wrote with him. The art of leg spin is creating something that is not really there. It's a magic trick, surrounded by mystery and aura. What's coming and how will it get there? At what speed, trajectory and with what sound? How much flight, swerve, dip and spin and which way? Where will it land and what will happen? There's no bowler in the history of the game that a decent batsman couldn't pick if he watched the hand. So a leg spinner must unsettle that batsman in a different way. Every leg spinner gives the batsman a clue. Some just disguise it better than others. Leg spinners cannot create physical fear in the way fast bowlers can, so leg spinners look to confuse and deceive. There is, however, an intimidation factor in leg spin that comes from the batsman's ignorance and his fear of embarrassment. Few batsmen, if any, truly know what I do. So to maintain that mystery, I look to develop an atmosphere of uncertainty and, if possible, to create chaos. It's all about being in control, about winning the psychological battle. And I very well remember those mornings batting against him, the level of skill in what he did and the power with which he did it. I saw it firsthand how the 10,000-hour theory rolled out. He was astonishingly gifted at something extremely difficult, and he knew it. He practiced relentlessly to perfect it, and he rejoiced in taking it to the world. Have a listen to Michael Slater commentating when Shane Warne takes Andrew Strauss's wicket in the 2005 Ashes.
And bowled him! How about that? Absolutely brilliant from Shane Warne.
He's made a few batsmen look a bit foolish over the years, and there's no disgrace in Andrew Strauss looking a bit foolish, but he did here.
Well, the thing there, Jared, is that Michael Slater is laughing at the genius. He's not laughing at Andrew Strauss at all. He's laughing. That ball spun so far.
It's ridiculous. I was talking to you about this before. In 1993, you watch Gat. Gat does not know that that ball is going to spin back. He understands it might come into his pads. By that point, every close-up, super slow motion footage from the front of the hand, from the side of the hand, we had had more footage of Shane Warne's hand than we saw probably of, you know, past legends' entire careers. We knew everything we needed to know about Shane Warne at that point. Andrew Strauss would have planned for him. He would have played him from a, you know, from a younger age. He was a very good player at that point. And yet still, when he does that, Andrew Strauss has the same face that Mike Gatting had, that utter confusion at how the ball could start there and end up behind him. And it goes in front of his legs, if you remember. It just spins so brutally there. And that, for me, it's the fact that for over 12 years, in the harshest possible public light, he still remained that mystery is just beyond belief for me.
Goffey, I'm sparing your blushes. You know, the power of personality. They've been very, I mean, Ian Botham had it. I think Dennis Lilly, Viv Richards, and to a degree, you certainly had it too. But Shane Warne, almost above all others, seemed to win moments simply through his own persuasion.
Absolutely. I think Viv Richards definitely had it. But as personalities go, Shane Warne. And I think Jared has a great point. I think because he was a spinner and he was stood so close to everyone, he was right there next to the umpire, and he always had that delay. Sometimes the tongue came out when he bowled it. And he did that little flip, didn't he, before he bowled. And that strut, that run-up, which we've all copied. When I've bowled leg spin, I've got a Shane Warne run-up. And in fact, most people around the world, whether you're in Sri Lanka, in India, in Pakistan, think they are Shane Warne, right? So that's the power of the personality. What he brought to cricket is, and rightly so, he's going to be remembered as one of the greatest cricketers of all time. And that will be forever and ever and ever. Because that personality got him those 700 wickets, as well as the skill of being able to land a leg spin, one of the most difficult deliveries to bowl on earth, and land it on a consistently at speed. When you face Shane Warne, you can face some of the fastest bowlers in the world and you have that fear, but they're going to hit you on the head, right? Everybody has that fear when you're going against quick bowling. With Shane Warne, it's, where am I going to get a run? Where am I going to get a run? He drifts it into you at a good speed and then turns out of the rough, especially in the second innings. If there's one time you want to face Shane Warne, it's on the first day of a test match just after lunch. Other than that, you know he's going to wear you down and get you out at some point. He bowls the overs, he takes home the prize. Simple as that. Warne knew if he bowled 20 overs, 25 overs, he was taking home the prize at the end of the day. Simple as that.
And in the days before DRS, he was the first to 700 wickets. He took 708 in all. The 700th came at the Melbourne Cricket Ground on England's tour in 2006-07. It was a cold, cold morning. Started at like 11 degrees. There was some sleet. Play was delayed. Australia were out in the field, and the moment came, you know, when he took off his jumper and he was throwing the ball in the anticipation of a huge, huge crowd on this piece of turf that was so very much his own. Wicket number 700, Melbourne, the Boxing Day Test.
Got him! There it is! Wicket number 700! And they can't catch him!
great as Scott Strauss.
In Australia, you know, there's a tall poppy syndrome, but it very rarely applied to Warne when it came to the playing of cricket. He was revered.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to look at Australia. Australia basically went from a very working-class country to a very middle-class country in that period that he was great. And there was a lot of cultural cringe. You would know this about Michael Clarke. He was seen as trying to be above his station. Warne was just accepted for being Warne, flaws and all, obviously. You know, Warne was in on the joke. And I think, you know, especially in Victoria and Melbourne itself, that, you know, he became the king. And, I mean, Dean Jones is still absolutely thought of as this huge figure. And to have Warne come on the back of that and be so much bigger in Melbourne, it was a phenomenal thing. And you're talking about a football town. You know, we talk about cricket as being a major sport in Australia, but in Melbourne, it's a Aussie rules football town, and they've just named a stand after Shane Warne because there's no footballer that gets close to what Shane Warne did for Melbourne in that thing. It's just a completely different level.
Yeah, there's a stand at the Aegeus Bowl, the Shane Warne stand. He was captain there for 4 years. And now there's going to be a stand at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, though rather irritatingly, they seem to be wanting to call it the S.K. Warne stand. And it doesn't sound right. It doesn't have a ring to it. It should be the Shane Warne stand, surely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really understand the thought behind that. But you would have seen the statue there. There's two great statues around the MCG. There's one of Keith Miller. Keith Miller looks like he's a superhero bowling. And the other one is Shane Warne. I think Keith Miller and Shane Warne in different eras just completely transcended cricket and celebrity in a way that other people just don't do.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, let's look about talk about those five cricketers of the century. When he died, I heard Geoffrey Boycott on one of the news channels, and he said there's three for me, Bradman, Sobers and Warne. They're the three I put apart from everybody else for their genius, for their ability to turn matches, for their entertainment. And we have to add in Jack Hobbs and, I've had a blank. Who was the other one? I know full well. They were all knighted, weren't they? Sobers, Viv Richards was the other one. So the five cricketers of the century were Jack Hobbs, Don Bradman, Gary Sobers, Viv Richards and Shane Warne. They all have greatness in the way they played the game. They all have extraordinary power of personality, but they all have general appeal. They say that you could listen to Jack Hobbs' bat. So clean did he hit the ball, even on the most difficult pitches. They say that Bradman's ability to simply steamroller the opposition, Viv's ability to destroy the opposition with the power of his stroke play, and Warne's ability to turn matches with the power of his personality. It's incredible that Shane Warne is amongst the five greatest cricketers of the 20th century, but it isn't a surprise, is it?
No, it isn't. I think I'm aged 52, same as Warne. I'm 52 in September. So I think when I look back, you've always got to respect the history of the game, and Jack Hobbs and Bradman and Sobers will be remembered forever. But I never saw them. And I think the two that stick out for me, obviously, are Viv Richards and Shane Warne. I was lucky enough to play against them both. And as far as I'm concerned, they are two genius cricketers who both helped transform the game of cricket in what it is today. Viv was way ahead of his time as a player. If you look at his strike rating when he first started, he's up there with the current players. And I think with Shane Warne, just took the game to another level. The expectancy, the standards of performing day in, day out in Test cricket. And he made Test cricket sexy. And that's why he's the king.
Yeah, that's a nice summary, isn't it? And it's reasonable to say that the impact he had on young people by making it sexy, if you like, by bringing a bit of rock and roll to it, probably hasn't been made by anybody else.
I mean, Nike made a big play into cricket, didn't they? And it was Shane Warne that they went after. They'd been involved before. I know they gave Beefy some boots at one stage, but they wanted Shane Warne. There were pictures of Shane Warne with Michael Jordan. They wanted to do that. That's not happening with other cricketers. He was famous on a different level. And, you know, for many leg spin nerds, he was taken away from cricket fans at a certain point and he becomes this other celebrity. The other thing I want to talk about those five cricketers, though, he was midway through his career when that happened. Like, this isn't... He had another 7 years of cricket after that, and we had already decided that the impact that he made on our game was so worthy that he was going to be in these five cricketers of all time. You know, and Sachin obviously didn't make it, and he went on to play even longer after Shane Warne. But Shane Warne almost had two different careers. That was the career where he was a physical specimen, where you could hear the ball hum in the air and the flipper and everything. He then completely reinvents himself, and I'd say he's in almost a better bowler when his arm and his shoulder don't, you know, fall down on him.
Exactly. And some of the cricketers that are off that list, like, say, Lara, Tendulkar, Botham, Hadley. I mean, it's amazing when you think about it, really. And that shows the power of being great. To be a real, real great, that list tells you. Because there's some unbelievable players and not on it.
Yeah. Thank you, boys. Fascinating. The outpouring since the news of his death has stretched far and wide and is still doing so. The Times of London gave him 14 pages, but he was front cover in Malaysia too. He was cricket, and in a way he was rock and roll too. He was the best of sport, and he was the core of aspirational dreams. He fed us the oxygen of the game in the most engaging and fascinating ways. He changed perception, he invited debate, he encouraged enthusiasm, he breathed hope. And he never surrendered. We owe Shane so much. What's the key to being a good leg spinner, Warney? They used to ask him. A lot of love, he would say. And we send him a lot of love. Shane Warne is a terrible loss.
Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at cricket_TS, and either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review, and if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.